Extravaganza.
What is up, all you cool kids, scaredy cats, and fans of the spooky out there in the world? This is the Horror Pop Extravaganza. I am Pops Ghostly, and with me as always is...
Harold Ramass. Thank you for having me.
Harold Ramass. About some people have probably already figured out what the fuck we're going to talk about for episode 14 here. But I love it, dude. Harold Ramass.
Pretty on the nose.
Right.
Yeah.
On the cheek.
Right on the cheek.
So we had chatted a little bit earlier today just on the random when we were like, hey, I got some time. You got some time. Let's record some. What's something we've both seen that is worthy of a chat that we should talk about for sure? Went back to the early 80s, a great time for movie making, like excessive movie making. And I think we just kind of relived another one of those where it's like with excessive CGI and shit that hopefully will balance itself out somewhere. But the early 80s had some great stuff. And there was one movie that when you say like 80s cinema, it stands the fuck out.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like, yes, this did a thing. And the way we got to it is you're wearing a shirt right now with a red circle on it, with a fucking line through it, and this great ghost like, what? I got caught. Oh, shit.
One might even say busted.
I wish Ray Parker Jr. would just bust through the room and just start singing and shit. I'd be like, ah! I mean, what are the odds? But you never know. So 1984's Ghostbusters, even though we probably don't need to do a lot of it, still, I would like you to, you know, introduce the movie because there might be some people who, for some crazy reason, have never seen the original Ghostbusters. Because if you're listening to us, I feel like you at least enjoy movies on some level. But either way, if you're just here for the nice shit at the end, that's super cool, too. But this is one. Listen up, because this is one worthy of checking out. So go ahead, Harold Ramass, and introduce Ghostbusters 1984 to us.
For those who haven't seen it, which is the only people that haven't seen Ghostbusters are the people that were in Ghostbusters living Ghostbusters.
Right.
1984, rated PG, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah. I mean, that whole, when was Red Dawn? Dawn, you hear that?
Red Dawn.
My fucking Midwest accent coming out. Because I think Red Dawn, or it was Temple of Doom that made them like, hey, we got to get another rating system. Because fucking Jaws is PG, dude.
It's got boobies, yeah. And it's got lots of blood.
Lots of blood. Like fucking one of the greatest scenes ever. Quint going down with the ship, fighting this fucking shark. Like, fuck you, dude. It was almost like the Indianapolis came back. Like, he never gave that up. But it was just right. Like... Fuck you ate all my friends and shit.
Yeah, dude.
So, 1984, sorry. I didn't mean to get off talking about Jaws, but...
Let me read you the synopsis.
Yes,
for Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Three parapsychologists forced out of their university funding set up shop as a unique ghost removal service in New York City, attracting frightened yet skeptical customers.
Right, yep, skeptical.
I want to find the man that wrote that, just clap him on the back and say amen, right. Brother. Right on.
Nailed it. He's probably like, nobody's fucking ever gonna read this. Everybody's seen Ghostbusters. Click, 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 click.
He's probably the one dude who's never seen it. He's the guy that we're doing this for. And he's like, I gotta write this fucking thing. So this is what I'm gonna shorten it up. This is what it's about.
It's beautiful.
All right. We've got some unknowns in this movie. Bill Murray as Peter Venkman.
Right.
Dan Aykroyd as Dr. Raymond Stantz. The unknown Sigourney Weaver as Dana Barrett. My namesake, Harold Ramis, Dr. Egon Spengler.
Yes.
Rick Moranis, I can't believe you fucked that up, as Louis Tully. Annie Potts as Janine Melnick. William Atherton is Walter Peck. It's true, this man has no dick.
That's such a good line.
Ernie Hudson as Winston Zeddemore.
Yes, Ernie.
Yeah, dude. And then we've got some other great players that go down the list, but I mean, Ivan Reitman directed it. Written by Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, and Rick Moranis. Uncredited, it says.
Yeah, but it was all these fucking SNL, Animal House, you know.
Just these fucking great dudes, you know.
Right. Like the writers, dude. Like when, how long was it after Murray was SNL? And I mean, this wasn't too far removed. And Aykroyd would still go on to do like Coneheads and shit. So was he current SNL when this came out?
No, he wasn't current. He was 70s SNL, I think, maybe early 80s, but fresh off of it.
Close. Yeah, they were all pretty close. And we saw these waves of movies come after the fucking success of Animal House.
Right.
And they were like, yo, okay, we took all these funny ideas from the magazine and shit. We made this movie, National Lampoon's. Like, you had a bunch of really funny human beings all collaborating on this thing.
Yeah, and they were all coming up together and collaborating together. And the original cast, this was written for Belushi to play Van Gogh.
Right. Yeah. And then, of course, Belushi.
He tapped out early.
Set the stage for Farley and fucking all them guys. Which, I don't know if this would have been the same movie.
It would have been so different, dude. Eddie Murphy, John Candy, and Belushi.
Right, because Hudson, I know, wasn't supposed to be there till like the very end or some shit like that.
Right, and Ramis didn't want to be in it. He just wanted to write it.
Right. And Aykroyd was just like, let's talk about ghosts. Yeah. Like, I love ghosts. And now that we know, you know, this was 84, so you didn't have all these behind the scenes or constant feeds of information. And, you know, now we see Aykroyd like just all about it. Dude, he's like, yeah, that was my whole fucking upbringing was fucking Ghostbusters. Yeah. You know, my family was into paranormal shit and EMPs and all these things. And
what's so ballsy about them writing this movie is, yes, they wrote it for their friends and shit. And they were like, yeah, let's just do this fun thing together. But they wrote this crazy idea where the effects weren't there before they wrote this, you know?
Right. Some great effects, dude. Like miniature work at the same time, you know, model work that's just super cool, all practical stuff for the most part. But then you have the rad, like Slimer, and you're like, oh shit, that really looks like a fucking cool ghost.
Right.
And the music is very, very
so
important
vital
in this movie. Yes, so vital. Especially the theme song. Like the 80s, they really, man, you think, like, I could say the Axel Foley theme. Probably 7 out of 10 people be like, like, they made the music great to go with the movie. And this, I want to say, because there was that documentary on Netflix, The Movies That Made Us. And I remember they did a Ghostbusters one. And is it Ray Park or Ray Parks Jr.? I don't remember.
It's Ray Park Jr.
Ray Park Jr.
Yeah.
That's it. But he was like, I just didn't know what to do. They're like, we need this fucking song and shit. And he's like, then I flip on the TV, you know, middle of the night, and it's this like infomercial, like, hey, call this number, 1-800-DA-DA-DA, to get the best hits in 1970 through BBB. And he's like, that's where it kind of came from, you know, just stemmed from being there and like, who are you going to call? And he's like, oh, you called the fucking Ghostbusters. And this song might have been bigger than the movie.
Oh, yeah, dude. And I remember watching that, too. And he was like, how do you rhyme Ghostbusters and like fit it into a song, you know? And then when he came up with who you going to call, like walk into a busy mall and just go, who are you going to call, and see how many people fucking yell it back at you.
Dude, yes.
That's how much in the culture it is, dude.
It is a deep-rooted part of the zeitgeist. And all the conventions I go to, you just have regular, you know, people who have whole little units of Ghostbusters, like a regional thing, and they've got the cars and shit, and their uniforms look amazing. They're like, oh, you want to take a picture with the cars and shit? And it's like, fuck yeah, I do. Like, this is super cool. It's almost not on the scale, but it is the Star Wars level of fandom where people are hyper committed to the Ghostbusters. And today we might touch on some things from this first movie. We're not going to walk through the whole thing, but this is more of a celebration of fucking Ghostbusters because it was everything. Anyone roughly close to our age remembers drinking an Ecto cooler, dude. A high C that had Slimer on it, and that shit was so cool. You had the cereal, you had the fucking cartoon, the real Ghostbusters. That was actually a good cartoon. You know, it wasn't just crap. It was right up there with Tales from the Crypt Keeper and stuff where it's like, yo, this is cool. This is a lot of fun. But this first movie is really what set the stage, and we had everybody there. When I told Shayna what we were going to be recording, I said, we're going to do Ghostbusters. She looked at me. She's like, Ghostbusters? I said, it scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. That library scene, dude.
Absolutely. I just started watching when she changes, like a month ago, dude, because I've been so scared my whole fucking life. And people are like, Ghostbusters ain't scary. Yeah, bullshit. That fucking scared me.
That scene is still creepy, dude. And it's the music, you're that, ooh, the 50s kind of almost sci-fi, you know, theremin or some shit. And she's just floating around like, shh. And then you get that, oh, we're in for like, this is going to be cool, dude. It is a hard PG. It is a hard PG.
Yes, it is, dude. And I think there's something inherently scary about libraries. Mm-hmm. Being, if you've ever been like in the books in the shelves, you know, between it isolates the sound, all those books.
Yes.
And it makes you feel so alone and creepy, you know?
And I think they were in the basement, right?
The basement of the New York Library. Yeah.
Right. Yes. That's when we get our first look at there is a supernatural presence in New York City. And it's a cool. The effects are so good, dude. When all the little Dewey Decimal cards go flying out everywhere.
Yeah, man.
I mean, it's a really terrifying sequence, dude. It's great.
And it looks easy. But if you think about it, how would you make those cards fucking flip out like that, you know, practically? Right.
Yeah, I think if you put them on like an angle and just had a thing that kind of like ticks back, but quickly, like,
yeah, it'd have to be like a card shooter in there.
Pressure release. Yeah. But it would be. But they took the time to do it all and to make it feel very real, because you have this effect on top of all the practical stuff. And the effect, I mean, they still look good. Yes. I don't know if it's a mix of like painted on practical, you know, or maybe they had a base model or something and then painted over top of the film.
They basically did it the same way that they do it at Disneyland in the Haunted Mansion, where they're projecting off of a reflected image. And the audience is going to kill us because it's called the something ghost. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
But it's an effect that basically like they've perfected. They used to do it in like carnivals and shit, like the old timey ones, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then Disney had heard about it and was like, how do we recreate this on a large scale? And when you see it,
steal somebody else's idea?
Exactly. It was what Walt Disney was best at.
Oh boy, this looks like $1 million.
But at the time, like when you go into that part of the ride where you're seeing the dining room scene and all the ghosts are dancing and everything and all this shit's going on, one of the best parts of the Haunted Mansion. But in that scene, you don't realize it, but you're passing by a huge single pane of glass. And at the for a bunch of years until just recently, it was the largest single pane of glass ever created.
Really?
Yeah. Little glass it is. Little factoid for you there. Free on the podcast.
Go and talk about it at work tomorrow. People will be
so impressed.
You're right. The effect looks awesome, and they use it a lot throughout this thing, you know, to get these cool ghost effects. Like you had mentioned earlier, even though I mean, Murray's a piece of shit with this fucking zapper machine, dude.
Yeah.
I've always thought that. Even since I was little, I was like, that just seems wrong. Nothing about, like, don't zap. Even though this dude's getting him, he's like a fucking black star. He's like, no, sorry.
And see me, like, I've always been like, right on, dude. That's how you get laid.
No. No.
The guy gets hit so hard with electricity, he spits his gum out. He's like...
And I want to say that dude was, he might have been one of the goons in Christine, maybe.
Really?
Possibly. I don't know. But I know I've seen his face before somewhere in that era.
I think he's related to Ramis or something. Like, he knew one of those guys.
It's possible. Why wouldn't you?
He's probably one of Bill Murray's brothers. They're always in there.
As the years ago have gone on, I've come to find Brian Doyle to be almost as funny, if not fucking funnier than Murray.
Dude. Absolutely, like, dude.
Yeah, Brian Doyle is just a killer. Like like you talked about previously, those people that chew up scenery.
Yeah.
Brian Doyle Murray, whenever he is on camera, is like, yes, you just take it, dude. Put the camera on him and just let him go. We're introduced to our paranormal investigators, Harold Ramis, Dan Aykroyd, and Bill Murray, who are... getting kicked out of, there's no funding or something like that. They're like, what you're doing is stupid. Like, listen, seriously, what you're doing is dumb. but they do decide to open a facility that they're going to use as a home base to hunt down paranormal things. And we already know paranormal's already happening, but it really starts happening pretty quick where we meet Slimer. And we're not going to go over past the firehouse. We'll get there eventually once he asks. It's a character all in and of itself. They're at the, I can't remember what hotel, some fancy hotel or some conference.
Waldorf Astoria, I think.
Maybe. You could be right, dude. You could be right. But they're there, and this guy comes out. He's like, look, fucking, there's something going on upstairs. You got to get rid of it. And as a kid, you're like, oh, no. Like, is it going to be super scary again?
Yeah.
Not at all. Not at all. Slimer, to me, like, after you see Venkman get hit and slimed, it's like, oh, okay. This is, he's just hungry as fuck. Like, they said they picked him on an old, like, gangster. You know what I mean? Like a, hey, Shane, like a James Cagney. Fucking, what are we doing here, guys? Or Al Capone, maybe it was, that they said, like, with his big fat ass. And Slimer's fun, and then we're introduced to the technology that we use to capture ghosts, and this is, I believe, where a lot of people who watch this movie for the first time just, like, fell in love, dude.
It's so well thought out. I mean, we were talking about, like, the effects and stuff. I love that not only did they come up with this stuff that was, like, it wasn't really based off anything at the time, like, we'd never seen a proton pack. We never saw the idea of, like, catching it in this little box with, like, light and stuff. They had to come up with all that stuff. And then they came up with jokes to make it funny. Like, the first, my favorite fucking thing in the whole series of Ghostbusters is when they turn on the proton packs for the first time in the elevator and the sound effect, and they all, like, kind of, like, slink away.
And we mentioned it earlier, the comedic geniuses. Amazing. So many ways.
Everything that happens in the movie, they came up with funny things to comment, like, no human being would stack books this way.
Right. And they're all fucked up all over the Right. And it just gets better once you get to Rick Moranis. I feel like he's amazing in this, but we'll get to him in a second. So we see the big epic Don't Cross the Streams, but everybody's got these, but they're cool looking packs on your back.
Oh, here, fuck, I'm, yeah, dude.
One of these, dude, they're rad, and they all have mechanic, essentially, coveralls, like khaki type coveralls with their names on them. And up to this point, I think we have Janine, because she's the one who gives them, hey, boys, we got one.
Yeah.
First time. Janine's amazing throughout the entirety of this thing. And this is where the firehouse, where you really get to see it in action. And they've just been waiting, like, is this going to pay off? And I believe it's while they're out fighting Slimer that Ernie Hudson shows up, and we get our fourth relatively quick. And he's like, I just want a job. Like, I don't give a shit. She's like, do you believe in the paranormal, ghost, demons, junk? You know, she does this whole thing. And he's like, does it pay good? Yeah, I'll take it. And Ernie Hudson, again, a scene stealer.
So good, dude. Yeah. And he got so screwed in this series. Yeah. He's not even on the poster, dude. Like, they just, like.
Right. Which sucks. I mean, was he on the poster for the second one, though?
Yeah, he got in there on the second one, you know, but. Yeah. Yeah, he always got left out. Whenever they talk about the Ghostbusters, you just see the three guys, you know, the three and whiteys.
See, and I always look for, I mean, Ernie Hudson in this and The Crow. I feel like he gets overlooked in The Crow so much. But the dude is a crazy talent. It's just so, like, good. I don't give a shit whose name is on top. I see you, bro. Like, I see what the fuck you're doing there, and it's good. Like, you're good, man. So now we've got our team of four. Things are starting to get really bad. Now I can't even. What caused the original eruption?
Well, so Dana Barrett's building is becoming, like, the epicenter. Basically, like, it was created to harness supernatural power. So we're seeing this in an exciting time where, like, there's always been supernatural stuff here and there, but we're hitting this time when, like, hell is coming to Earth. You know, and so, like, there's a lot more ghosts.
Yeah, I just can't remember if they ever said what was the catalyst, because it essentially, they talked about it, like you said, opening up, like something opens up, and then it really opens up once the two fucking come together. And
I mean, there's guys screaming at you right now because they're like, well, it was because of Gozer the Gozerian, and he was
right. And as much as I love Ghostbusters, and I've seen it probably a couple hundred times, it's not one that when I was a kid, like I loved it, but I was committed to other things as far as like deeper knowledge. And I'm past that point in my life where I'm trying to add a bunch of more deeper knowledge. Like I have my core shit that I've learned about, and I'll add a couple little things here and there. But the people are a fucking, and then it's the same way with Star Wars. Like I know Star Wars, but I don't fucking know
I mean, same way.
Some people do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's okay. That's okay. I'm sure there's some dumb shit I could talk about that everybody be like, what the fuck are you even? Who gives a fuck about that movie from 1932? Be like, no, but it matters. It connects to Rob Zombie. That's corpsey. And things start to pick up, and that's when we get Sigourney Weaver's like, yo, there's some fucked up shit going on in my fridge. Again, awesome effect.
Yeah, the eggs popping out and cooking on the countertop.
Yes, so good. Just great shit. And then, like you said, though, you bring in the comedy with fucking Bang Bang when he shows up and he's like, oh, yeah, what's going on in your bedroom?
He just wants to get laid. Like, that's all he cares about.
That's all he cares about.
She's like, he's all, what's in there? She's like, oh, that's the bedroom. She's like, but nothing ever happened in there. He's like, what a shame. Right. I love it.
And he's like, that he's walking around.
He's dingling on the piano. He's like, they hate this. He's just making shit up as he goes. I love it.
Right. And that was all probably improv, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, maybe some of it was written down, but they were probably like, yo, just go in there and fuck around and, you know, say some funny shit.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, okay, you know, I'll fuck it, dude. Just Bill Murray. And he opens the fridge and he makes some kind of funny ass remark, like your eggs are about, or your milk's about to expire.
Like, oh my God, you eat this stuff? And it's just all like, it's bologna and shit. And she's like, Coca-Cola. She's like, this wasn't in there. There was a head and it said Zool.
Right.
He's like, all right, if you say so, lady.
It's shortly thereafter that we meet Rick Moranis, who is just the, I don't know how to, I mean, it reminds me so much of Little Shop of Horrors. Like, he plays this quirky, like, bubbly, but you just love him at the same time kind of character. He's having this party and he just invites all of his clients because he's an accountant or some shit.
Yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, I helped him save so much. So come on in, try some of the cheese. Ha ha, it'll be great.
We're about to play Parcheesi.
Right. And he again has some great one-liners. Like you said, even when the dogs show up, you know, who brought the dog? What the fuck are you talking about, dude? And I can't remember when Bill Murray meets up. When does she get fully possessed? It's not long. It's somewhere around here where she gets fully taken over.
Well, that's so, yeah. So she's, he's trying to hook up with her basically. And in the meantime, like her apartment is getting like, it's the epicenter of all this shit. And she just comes home and she's sitting in her chair. And this is one of the things that scared the shit out of me too when I was a kid. These creature hands start coming out of the chair and grab her, dude. Rather inappropriately, I might add.
Yes. There's a lot of inappropriate in this movie.
But it just sucks her into the kitchen, dude. And it is scary.
I forgot about all the hands. Very labyrinth, like with the sheet goes down. Yeah. It's just something you don't want. Like a whole bunch of arms coming out and snatching you up all at once. But we do get the montage with the Ray Park Jr. song. And the Dan Aykroyd thing with the ghost taking his pants off always fucking weirded me out. Even
it
from the beginning,
still weirds me out, dude. It's so like out of place.
Yeah, and I'm like, this was for kids and shit,
right? And it always like
his fucking eyes go, you know, googly.
I would watch this with my parents, dude, and I get so embarrassed at that part because like I didn't even know what was going on. Like, I just knew something sexual was happening. When his eyes crossed, I was like, she's touching his pee-pee.
I know. Something's happening, and I don't know what. Again, PG, which by today's standards, they'd be like, get the fuck out of here, dude.
What's crazy about this, too, is in the comedy, throughout it, I think this was one of the number one movies where, like, there were adult jokes that I did not understand when I saw it, but I laughed because my parents were laughing. You know, until watching it years later where like he's talking to the librarian in the beginning and he's like, are you menstruating right now? I didn't know what the fuck that meant. She's like, why does that have to do with anything?
Ghosts can smell it. They're like bears.
He's all, hey, back off, bud. I'm a scientist.
they've been collecting up ghosts, but the mayor is trying to be convinced by their former, is it their former dean or whoever was the head of their department?
No, so Walter Peck comes in and he works for the Environmental Protection Agency.
That's it.
And he wants to see their facility and where they're storing these ghosts.
Right.
Which, from the way they explain it, their facility is just a nuclear reactor in their basement.
Right. He's like, fucking shut it down. You got to shut it. And they're like, no, all the ghosts fuck go everywhere. Like, you can't shut it down.
It was always my favorite in the animated series when they would go inside the containment unit.
Right.
That was the best.
Dude, I love just the animation.
Yeah.
The animation made me very happy. I'm going to need to go back and rewatch some of that sometime soon because I do remember really, really liking it. And the action figures were cool.
Dude, that was one of the things I never got and always wanted was the Firehouse action figure set. Only the richest, coolest kids had that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never had any of that good, like super badass shit. It was always like whatever, you know, it was probably about a year old.
Yeah. I was like playing in a dirt hole in my backyard, and that's where my figures lived.
Dude, we buried my brother up to his neck once in a dirt hole just so we had nothing else. Nothing else. So I'm with you there. Just go dig a fucking hole. And we did pull a Looney Tunes once, and me and my middle brother dug a hole covered in sticks and leaves and shit. And we told our little brother, we were like, yo, come over here. And he fucking fell right through.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Mom's in the house. We tossed him a shovel, said, dig yourself out. That fucker he dug steps into the side of it, got himself. I mean, it wasn't super deep. You know what I mean? Right. No, it wasn't super deep. But he dug himself a couple little steps out. And then my mom says, she's like, I just look out the window and see your tiny little brother with a shovel over his head screaming, fucking running across the yard. Like, yeah, mom, we were kind of hillbillies, I guess. I don't know. Or sons of the soil, I believe is the term. So back to Ghostbusters. We've got two entities. So what are their names? Go ahead. Because they have to come together. Rick Moranis and Sigourney Weaver.
The
evil.
They get possessed by Gozer the Gozerian, and one of them is the gatekeeper, and one of them is the keymaster.
Right.
So she's the gatekeeper. Yeah. Right. And he's the keymaster, and she comes to the door. She's all sexualized and shit.
It's very phallic.
She's very dirty.
She's the key.
But I love when Marie comes to the door and she opens it, and like the wind's only blowing on her. And she's like, are you the key master? And he's like, no. Nope. Slam. The door just closes. And then he knocks again. She's like, same thing. She's like, are you the key master? He's like, yes, I am.
And she just lets him
in. Yeah.
Like this great evil presence that's just like fooled by a fucking one door shut and then open it back up.
Yeah. And at first he's like, he totally knows she's possessed, and she's like coming onto him and shit. And he's like, all right, go ahead. No, don't.
He might actually take it.
She's like, I want you inside of me. He goes, it seems like there's at least two people in there already.
A great line.
It's so good, dude. And then when she floats, a fucking great effect, dude. And her dress is hanging down and she spins.
Yes. And we'd seen some really cool, you know, The Exorcist showed us something like, hey, this kind of practical thing might be possible. But it is a great effect. It's a super good effect. And right around here, so he's gone. Rick Moranis has been taken over, and he shows up like looking amazing, disheveled, just
all the hair out of all over the place stuff. Yeah, shirts all untucked.
And he's like, "Okay, we got to do this thing." And so they end up connecting, and the Ghostbusters are like, "We got to go fucking shut this thing down." So we're gonna go up there, and this is one of the. I mean, it's TMNT 1990 level of good finale on the top of a building.
Dude,
I think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles did that probably the best it's ever been done. And you want to talk about music that fucking throwing them everywhere. But we get up to the top of this building and super cool long shot from up top looking down on the steps and are you a god? He's like, no. He's like, hey, next time somebody asks you if you're a god, say yes. Like, that's
what
genius.
A perfect line, dude.
It's great. Proton packs to full power. But at this time, I can't remember how they lead into, like, I'm going to bring to life whatever your, you know, whoever has the thought, like, whatever the worst fear is.
She says, choose your destructor. Like, oh, choose your destructor. You just hear, like, yeah, the lightning and shit. And they're all like, all right, think. And then they're like, the destructor has been chosen. They're like, whoa, we didn't say shit. And Hagrid looks all, he's all, like, guilty and shit. He's like, Ray, what did you do, Ray?
It's the first thing I could think of. I'm so fucking sorry. It's the first thing I came to my head. And then we don't get it vocalized, but we just hear everybody's probably favorite character in this movie.
Favorite character of all time, dude. Like, damn. What a great idea. Again, everything in this, from the look that Zool looked like, the way they came up with her look.
With the Slimer. Eyes and the sparkly everywhere.
Yeah, dude.
The hair. Yeah.
So good, man. And then just for this finale, we get one of the most epic creations of all time, the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
Yes. And this is where, you know, you see hints of Godzilla and, you know, the kaiju. Like, this is a fucking marshmallow kaiju.
Yes.
Unreal cool. Yeah. How does that sense make sense and this be so cool? But it is, because you have the miniatures, you got the big head like turning, like, just smashing things all over the place.
He's horrifying and cute at the same time. How do you pull that off?
It's hard.
He's wearing a sailor hat, dude.
Right. With a big red bow and shit on it. Like, yes, Mr. Stay Puft. They're like, what the fuck did you think of that for? And do they just blaster him? I know they get down, you know, to, and they just kind of shoot him.
He's climbing up the building and they full proton pack him and he catches on fire. This is the first time you see him kind of scary, like his face grimaces and he screams and he reaches up with a big flamey arm.
Yes. And then he explodes and they get all covered in marshmallow.
Which was, again, was great. Like, what a great ending is everybody so gets good. Covered.
I think one of them might like taste it and shit. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
Walter Peck gets it like the worst. He just gets it dumped on him, dude. And then they show everybody's covered in it. And Bill Murray comes out and he's got one little poof on his hair. That's it. He's totally clean.
I don't want that shit all over me. I'm not doing it.
He's like, fuck, get that away from me. I'll fucking hit you.
I'll walk away right now. I'll leave right now. So, great effect. One of my favorites was always them coming out of the stone gargoyles at the end.
So when cool how that happened. Yeah.
When those start to crack apart and it's like this, you know, rebirth of some sorts. And then you see fucking Rick Moranis with his glasses half cockeyed, like one barely on. And he's like, oh, shit. And then Sigourney Weaver seems like her and Bankman are going to connect at some point. And we get, you know, this kind of cool that we saw so much in the 80s, this cool New York ending where, you
know, it looked like just New York was the coolest place to be, dude. Everybody was like in love and together and they came together as a city. And you're like, damn, dude, I want to go to New York in 1984. No, you didn't.
That's when crack was really in full swing.
It's the Stay Puft Crack Man.
That is the scariest thing I could think of. My addiction coming back is a giant fucking crack rock. The whole time this is all in Ray's head. It's, they're like, dude, you're in a fucking hospital. You gotta get it. He's fucking in withdrawal. And it just turns into a giant crack rock monster. They broke Tom back and he's eyes fucking everybody's eyes.
We need a giant spoon.
But no, it is very that New York. And like you said, it's like, think about it. There must be higher love. Everything's just like great. And Ghostbusters, who you gonna call, became a phenomenon.
Absolutely.
We saw a sequel that I like a lot. I know
I think
some
it's great.
People, I think it's great too. I love the villain. I love the river of fucking goo. You know, we had both of these on VHS as a kid, so I watched them both a lot. And then we got the, what year was the first, was the remake or the reimagining? 2016, 15, 14?
Yeah, something. Right in the, like, I remember 2016 being like the worst year for movies ever.
I remember that was 1989. That was a bad year for horror.
Now, I don't like that movie, but I love all the ladies in it. And it came down to like, nobody wants Lady Ghostbusters. I was fine with Lady Ghostbusters. It was just a bad movie.
There was a lot of it where I was like, man, you could have done different here. But I'm with you. Pretty much anything, if Kate McKinnon shows up, I'm like, I'm down, dude.
Yeah, dude.
They're all very funny. I was sad to see the huge, you know, fight that erupted over this reimagining. We've seen these things come and go. There's no reason to really be that upset about it if you don't like it, because you still have the ones that you do like. We had the cartoon, and Chris Hemsworth in that shit is funny as fuck. I don't care what anybody says. Yeah. He's super hilarious, and they're all very funny. But just from a storytelling standpoint, I think it struggled a little bit, especially comparatively. You know, it's hard to recapture fucking lightning in a bottle.
Exactly.
It's really, really hard.
Yeah. And I don't even think it's possible. And then they did the game, which was cool, where all the guys came back and did the voices.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great game. That was the problem with that, you know?
Just functionally, it wasn't, you know, that good. And then we got Afterlife, which came just a few years back, 2, 3, 4 years ago. So I don't remember. This shit's just all fucking.
Now, Afterlife speaks to something you were talking about when we were off air, which is like, I got all excited from this teaser trailer when they show the, you know, they go into that barn and you see the thing flat back and you see Ecto-1.
Talk about Ecto-1, dude.
Dude, Ecto-1.
Again, a character in and of itself.
It's absolutely. The up there with the Batmobile.
Yes, as far as like, I mean, it's Kit, it's Ecto-1, the Batmobile. There's certain cars that are just, you know, the General Lee, as much as people might argue about some of that shit now, like flag off top that spine, I don't care. But there are these iconic vehicles, the Millennium Falcon, and this is one of them. Ecto-1 is so badass. You know, it's just an ambulance that they're an old school ambulance that they put all kinds of shit just all over it.
Yeah,
it looks
fun.
Glory is like that thing will take down a ghost if we needed to.
But it's also the sound design of it, dude. The fucking screeching of the tires. Like, you can't think of Ecto-1 without it squealing around a corner and the you know, like, yeah.
So in the teaser for Afterlife, we did get that.
But what you were saying is like, we've had it all already. We've had all these Ghostbusters experiences. You can't show us a nipple when we've seen the whole titty.
That is fair. That's a good way to put it. But I like Afterlife for, there were a lot of elements I enjoyed about it. And I think, you know, all the little Stay Puft dudes, like,
oh yeah, that was great.
Smile on my face.
Yeah.
And I think they're setting this up for, you know, a new generation. You live long enough, you'll see the same story get told a couple times, probably.
Yeah.
But they're setting this thing up. I believe, at least from the new, what's the new one going to be called?
Frozen Empire.
So at least from that one, it looks like they're going to bring back some of those original elements that I believe people were like, yo, you know, you set it up one way. Now, how dope was it, that little gunner seat in Ecto-1, though, when they're sliding through town and
shit? Yeah, dude, that was badass.
There's a lot to enjoy in that movie, and there's a lot to enjoy in the Lady Ghost, for lack of a better term, the Lady Ghostbusters, because that's what everybody called it for a long time. It's just a cool world and a cool idea of people who hunt ghosts, but not like, did you hear that?
Yeah.
And then it's nothing. It's like, yo, they're like, like it's scary monsters. It's like Scooby-Doo come to life.
But I'm sure
those cats were raised on Scooby-Doo.
Absolutely. But you can't take Star Wars out of space, and I don't think you can take Ghostbusters out of New York. You know, like they did that Punisher movie with Thomas Jane, and they put him in Florida, and it fucking blew, dude. It didn't feel like the Punisher.
It wasn't as gritty. And I get some of that, but Star Wars, I mean, really was just cowboys in space.
Yeah.
So you could bring it back down and make it cowboys.
And I thought it was cool, like when they took the Predator out of the jungle and put him in the city in the second one. But
it wasn't the same. But that was also lots of Predators and lots of other, you know, different shit going on.
Yeah.
You didn't have Jesse the Body and Arnie and fuck Carl Weather. You know, you didn't have Predator. Man, it was just everything that was perverts. I don't know what else to say. It's just fucking glorious. But so I will watch the new one, you know, when it comes out. I will for sure check it out. I just believe that this one is very hard to, it's hard to top because it was just all the right elements came together at the right time and birthed something that you can't just be like, oh, we'll just bring back these couple pieces, because Harold Ramis is one of the funniest fucking dudes, man. The writer, like, and even as an actor, like in this, his, you know, little crush with Janine and shit, their relationship.
Right.
And him, you know, being just this kind of, oh yeah, the functional fucking da 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 da. Yeah. And just kind of clueless to everything else, but just plays it really well.
I collect spores, mold, and fungus.
Oh, Egon.
Yeah, I don't think I felt Egon's, even though his presence was big in that afterlife thing, I missed him, especially at the end, you know, like, and I think when we see all the Ghostbusters back in the firehouse and everything, I think you're really going to feel the absence of Egon being there.
And they're trying to replace it with his, what was it, his granddaughter?
Yeah, well, his all that is like his grandkids and his actual daughter. Are these right. New characters, but you just can't replace one of the main members. It's like one of the Beatles dying and then trying to do a new Beatles album. Yeah. Like,
yeah, and even though now they're fucking doing, we'll talk about that in a minute. So Ghostbusters, you know, 10 out of 10, 5 out of 5, however you want to rank it. It's a cult classic. It has spawned, you know, so much love and lore and merchandising. There's comic books, fucking fan fiction, you know what I mean?
Yes, it's dude. All I probably revisited that movie once a year for my whole life. Like, I probably have never gone a year without at least watching it once.
If it pops up on TV, I'm turning it on.
Fuck yeah, dude, just having it in the background.
If I'm just like, oh man, Ghostbusters, like there's something special there.
Absolutely, dude. My first 4K movie, I rebought Ghostbusters.
Really?
Yeah.
I bought the Dark Crystal. Was the first one that I was like, I'm going to spend the fucking ridiculous amount of money you guys are asking for these.
I also want to say Ghostbusters is I have a huge love for movies, and it has spawned from growing up in the 80s and everything. The first movie I ever remember seeing was Ghostbusters in the drive-thru.
Really? You mean the drive-in?
That is the first movie.
The drive-thru.
Not the drive-thru, the drive-in. Yeah. My parents took me and saw Ghostbusters. Seriously, though, dude, how excited were you to go to McDonald's to get a Ghostbusters toy?
Dude, I have a full set of Batman Forever glasses from McDonald's. The cut ones Batman Robin, and then I've got the full set of McDonald's Batman Returns, the plastic ones that was like six of them. Dude. Yeah, man, because that was cool. The merchandising that came along with.
Check it out, dude. That came in the Happy Meal, dude. It's a bubblegum dispenser.
That's glorious. And that's when they give you cool shit. I mean, every once in a while, the kid will still get some. But I've got these little guys that are sitting just like right here, dude.
Yeah, dude. Rescue Rangers.
Yeah. 84 at the drive-in. That would have been pretty sweet. I was Batman. Batman was the first thing I remember seeing, 89.
Nice,
how old are you? When were you born?
45, 78.
Okay, 45. So I'm 41, so that makes sense. I was a little bit... I remember begging my mother to take me to see Child's Play. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, Mom, please. Like, I want to see... She's like, no, we're going to go watch fucking Batman. I'm like, okay, let's go watch Batman. And you want to talk about something that thrilled and chilled and scared. And I can still see Nicholson hanging from that fucking bell tower or belfry. You know, that, and then you get down to the bottom that. And right from the Danny Elfman swell, that do, 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 do.
I just watched it with my kid. He's just now getting into movies. And I watched 89 Batman with him on our big screen. And he fucking loved it, dude. And it was like, the look on his face, I could see myself at the same age, dude. He was like almost the same age when I saw Batman. He's 11, so.
And it was, it was glorious. And then the year after was TMNT. And I remember like, Mom, will you please buy me that tape so I can get that MC Hammer fucking song? That T-U-R-T-L-E power Ninja Turtles. And I used to sit on our little tiny radio we had that had one tape, you know, or like two tape slots. And I'd fucking plug it in and play it. And it was fun.
Yeah, dude.
Okay, so Ghostbusters, wonderful. You kind of segue right into what I want to talk about before we leave here. And that is... you mentioned even the Beatles, and there's, you know, people who are now selling their likeness that can be used in the event of their death or working out contracts and things like that. That's fucked up.
It's so fucked up.
We need to let things die and know that things are temporary.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is forever. You will be separated from everything you are close to, everything you hold dear. At some point, you will be separated from that. And this idea of like, oh, yeah, we're going to make a new fucking Beatles song by collaborating all these old records and getting a fucking machine to learn the vocal tracks and shit. I think we've got to let dead be dead.
Yes.
That's important.
Yeah.
Dead be dead. Unless you're a zombie, then live your best zombie fucking. But yeah, this is, I mean, you know, I think there was an article or something about Tom Hanks was talking about, oh yeah, you know, I don't know what they were going to do with this. I know I gave it to a commercial or something like that. And it might not even have been Tom Hanks, might've been somebody else. I don't pay attention to that shit like I used to, like the stuff that's like, oh, you know, I used to read the movie news fucking every week for 5 years. And I'm like, I just can stay away from that. It's okay.
I know they they re-brought in George Carlin. And created a new comedy set, and his daughter was fucking pissed.
I'd be so. Who signed off on it?
I don't think anybody did. I think they just did it, dude. And it's like for a commercial. It's like really ugly and bad.
Yeah, let dead be dead. There's no reason to, and because nothing lasts like that. That's unreal. That's a weird fantasy.
It shouldn't. Yeah.
No, and this idea that, you know, even the Neuralink shit that Elon Musk was talking about. He's like, oh, yeah, realistically, you know, they could download your memories and shit and create like, hey, plug and play. And we could, you know, based on everything that you've ever done, we could create a simulation of you that's going to be probably really fucking close.
Yeah, but it's not you.
Right. But imagine if they took all these podcasts, you know, me and Phil did fucking 250 of them. And, you know, you and I will probably be doing this for a really long time. If they took it all and was like, yo, make a show based on this, it'd probably get pretty close.
Well, look at what they do with Harrison Ford and Dial of Destiny. It's really close, but it ain't right.
No. Right. It's not.
He doesn't sound like he did back in the day. And they had all that. Or they had all that footage of all him saying all that shit. He didn't say anything new in this movie. He said shit he was saying back then, but it didn't sound like young Harrison Ford to me.
It's weird, dude.
Yeah. And his face, like just sometimes it would be so good. I was like, oh, they nailed it right there. And the next second it looked like what?
Because your eye will always see that, which is not natural, like in the natural world. You'll always pick up on it. And that's why effects, you know, and even like you said with Ghostbusters, it was a practical lighting effect. That was used to create the desired. So the light was real. The light was real in space, in time. It wasn't on a computer screen that was then added in. Even when they used to paint on film and shit, that was still practical. You know, you had to go through and do it. Mm-hmm. But when you see an effect that is not, especially this young face shit is getting real old real fast.
It's, yeah. Yeah, it's, man. And it just, like you said, it's just not right. Like, no. Let it go. Let shit go. We need new shit, not recycling old shit. Grand Moff Tarkin should not have been in Rogue One.
Right.
As Peter Cushing. Recast the motherfucker. Find another old ass shit and he can be Grand Moff Tarkin and I will buy that shit better than I did your CG. Dude, yeah,
but we're talking about Peter Cushing, one of the greatest horror fucking icons of all time, which we'll get into some of that sometime. And I'm with you there. Like, the dude left his legacy. Let that legacy be it. Time will go on. Right. And, like, don't profit off of that shit.
Right.
That's not – it just doesn't seem right, dude. And maybe, you know, people – you could make an argument, I guess, that, well, people profit off, like, dead people's books and shit. Well, fuck it. That fucker's been dead. Shakespeare's been dead for 400 years. None of his relatives are like beating down the door, like, give me my royalties and whatnot. And what's the deal with royalties anyway? I think what you're, you know, once you're done, maybe one generation of royalties.
Yeah.
But after that, it's like, okay, you've been dead for 100 fucking years. Like, so much has probably changed. It's okay.
Yeah.
But we want to like bring this shit back, and it's weird, you know, the holograms on stages, and you got.
Well, it's okay to do that because Tupac's still alive, and so like the only way he can exist is through a hologram, because you can't shoot a fucking hologram, motherfuckers.
I remember Snoop looking at that hologram like, That's just wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man, the way it's going. But let dead be dead, because only then does life really matter. When you know it's going to end, only then does it begin to truly open up and be like, oh, fuck, this shit matters. You know, like, just being alive is fucking okay. That's all right. Because
being dead's okay.
Yeah, it's part of life. Like, and even, you know, we're not going to go too deep into all the dead stuff, but, you know, are you ever, like, I don't know. Yes, my dad is not physically on this earth, but is he dead inside of me? Like, did all of the parts of him that make me up, is that dead? Like, I'm starting to look just like the motherfucker, only he had more hair. Like, my shit's bald as fuck. He still had a little bit, even all the way up to the end, he still had a little bit on top. But is he dead? Like, when my mom's no longer here, is she dead? Is she, you know, alive in me? And then was her parents some part of them? And you know what I mean?
Let me ask you this. Yeah. If you could fucking get a phone call right now from the AI version of your dad and you could talk to him again.
No.
But you're just, you know, it's a computer.
Nope.
Right? Because it's not, the soul's not there.
Right. They did that good Black Mirror episode about that shit.
I remember that. Yeah.
Those first couple seasons, man, those are bangers, just bangers, one right after another. Yeah, but yeah, no, I wouldn't want that. And I think that's why I'm such a big fan of the Twilight Zone, because that's an idea that Rod Serling, I feel like, struggled with, and you could see it expressed in his work. This, you can never go home. Mm-hmm. You can't go back, you know, and to try is only to create new suffering, because eventually you're going to get to that point where it's like, shit, like, that's not, you know, the real person. But for me, and whatever, I'm not even going to say, not to sound too metaphysical anymore or esoteric, because that's just the way I'm going to talk. But I'll meditate sometimes, and I feel like converse with my dead father, because he is in there. He's still a part of all of me. And then, you know, think about it like food. Like, you eat a piece of chicken, some delicious fried chicken. Once it's in you, is it chicken or is it you?
Oh, shit. What came first, the fried chicken or you?
When it becomes shit, then what is it? It goes out into a septic, then becomes compost for these other fucking bugs and critters and shit like that. It helps the fucking grass grow and whatnot. I mean, if you're living in a metropolitan area, it probably becomes fucking sewage all over. But
probably becomes some part of somebody's house.
Right. So, and let's say you get bit by a mosquito. Is that mosquito you now, or is it still mosquito because it's full of your blood?
Well, if that mosquito gets dipped in amber in like 300 billion years, they might be able to clone me and call it fucking Harold Ramaz Park. Welcome to Ramaz Park.
Ramaz. But yeah, I think we're kind of on the same page, but there is, you know, the more you look at that, I was talking to my, and just so everybody understands, I talked to my almost 5-year-old the same way I'm talking to you right now.
Right.
And she's like, oh, how, she brought up one of her things, a little stuffy or something like that, a little stuffed animal. And she's like, how did this get made? And I said, oh shit. I said,
here we go.
I said, but it, you know, I don't get too deep. I just start with them like, you know, it took a lot of people to make that. And the material was something originally. It was, you know, something that was grown, and it had to be grown by the sun. Like, technically, the sun is in your little stuffy if you look hard enough. And she's just like, oh, okay. And then, takes off. But we have those conversations, and it's cool. But let dead be dead. We got to let dead be dead.
Let dead be dead. I think dead
be dead.
Dead is better.
Sometimes dead is better. You gotta bury your own.
Yeah, that's good.
I love me some Fred Gwynne, dude. Motherfucking man, Herman Munster. But yeah, we should talk. I know you've probably seen. Did you watch the new Pet Sematary, The Bloodlines?
I didn't. I heard a lot of bad about it, so I didn't watch it. But
I really enjoyed it.
Really?
I really enjoyed it, dude. I thought it was fun. And it's all of Jed's story. Like, when he was young and he talks about that kid coming back from the war and shit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and David Duchovny plays that kid's dad. But it's cool, man. It was a lot. I enjoyed it. I thought it was
good. Pet Sematary is one of the scariest fucking movies I've ever seen, dude. And I saw that movie one time where it was a Halloween thing. And it was like a haunted house while they played that movie. So they were fucking with you, along with the movie. So when the truck drove by, they would sneak up behind your chair, dude, and blow an air horn in your ear. And I like, I must have sweat through my shirt 5 times, dude. I mean, the human body isn't ready for 2 hours of that much horror. Like, right, you go into a haunted house, you're through that bitch in 20 minutes. Like, in a movie, it was too much, dude. They were coming, they were sneaking down the curtain on the side, and I was like, I see you, motherfuckers, you're not gonna get me again. When they cut that fucking dude's ankle,
Achilles?
They fucking grabbed your ankle. Someone was under the seat, dude.
Yeah, that'd be scary, dude.
And they had fake audience. They had like fake audience members. They had people that were dummies, like set up in the chairs. But some of those dummies were real people, dude. And they would sit there the whole time and not move. And then this motherfucker turned around and looked at me, and I just screamed at him like a little girl, dude. Just
That's kind of fun, though. I'd be down.
It was pretty crazy.
We did that shit once when I worked at a movie theater. When it was I Know What You Did Last Summer came out, and we got the full outfit, the slicker and everything.
Nice.
And about halfway through, right when it got, you know, going into the third act, shit's really scary. We'd come out from behind the curtain and just walk down the aisles, and fucking people would just jump and be screaming, and it was fun. But that sounds way better. Almost like I want to do one of them Jaws things where you float around in the fucking water.
I don't know if I could do that either.
It'd be fun if somebody just have some divers down there and come up and tickle your feet and shit.
Oh, man. Fuck.
So that was fun. That was a fun episode. Yeah, Ghostbusters, check it out.
How many proton packs do you give this movie? Pops?
5, 6 out of 5. 6 out of 5, baby. So for the Horror Pop Extravaganza, I have been Pops Ghostly.
And I'm Harold Ramass.
And we will
ram you next time.
I almost said that, but I was like, no.
I saw it on your lips, and I was like, he ain't going to say it. He's too classy. I'm not classy.
I appreciate it. You are the Stimpy to my Ren. Or I should say probably the Ren to my Stimpy. I don't know which way it would
go. I'll Ren your Stimpy any day, Pops.
So would you be Ace or Gary for the ambiguously gay duo?
Who's the backspoon?
The ambiguously gay duo. So next week, episode 15 is coming at you. Carrie, Ramass, thank you for everything. And everybody stay cool out there. Be present. Enjoy your loved ones.
Stay spooky.
Bye.